You're listening to CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Hello, this is Rabble Radio, recorded on Friday, June 26, 2026. I'm your host, Nick Seabrook. Rabble.ca shares the news of the day through a progressive lens. If you're curious about what's happening in Canadian politics, labor, the environment, and beyond, you've come to the right place. This is news for the rest of us. Thanks for tuning in. As a part of Rabble's 25th birthday, throughout this summer, Rabble Radio is diving into our archives and sharing some of our favorite episodes. This week's re-released episode takes us back to January 2017, the month of Donald Trump's inauguration for his first term as president. We're joined by former Rabble contributor Sophia Royce as she shares her reflections from the Women's March in Washington, D.C. We also hear voices from the Vancouver and Toronto protests. There is something so powerful about listening to people take to the streets the very day after his inauguration. It completely captures the start of a massive wave of resistance and serves as a heavy reminder that the battles people were fighting back then are the exact same ones we are still up against right now. From January 2017, here are those conversations, with an introduction by then-podcast host and producer Victoria Fenner. Take a listen.
I'll never forget the despair that I felt when it became apparent that Donald Trump had won the presidency. I'm not alone in that by any stretch of the imagination, and we all needed some reasons to be hopeful. And then the Women's March on Washington bloomed in front of our eyes. And then it spread, not just throughout the United States, but also throughout the whole world. A whole garden of peaceful protests sprung up in all corners of the planet. The times are still very frightening, and it's going to take concerted, sustained effort to build the resistance against the new American political reality. It was a powerful start, though, a sign of hope in the midst of all that fear. First up, we're going to take you to the big march. Sophia Royce is an American living in Toronto. She's also a Rabble contributor. She went to her hometown of Washington and shares her thoughts.
Well, I grew up in Washington, D.C., actually, on Capitol Hill, and I think I was there on Saturday for the same reason that millions of people around the world marched, to say no to the Trump administration and what it stands for, to reject hatred in all its forms, to reject the capitalist logic that's led to rising levels of inequality, not just in the United States, but around the world, and to ask for sound, responsible climate policy. That's not an exhaustive list of the sort of demands that I think the co-organizers of the Women's March on Washington are outlining, but I think it's important to note that while it was a women's march, a newly elected Senator of California, Kamala Harris, said it best, this is a women's march, but women's issues are the economy, the climate, healthcare, education, all of these things are on our agenda. You know, on the one hand, I was surprised by the turnout in D.C. I think it was something like four times as big as the initial estimates guessed. But on the other hand, I was more surprised by the global turnout. And I think that's sort of what we'll need to keep in mind going forward, that this can't be an isolated struggle. It needs to be a decentralized struggle, an internationalist struggle. It needs to be the beginning of a new left that's inclusive and accessible to all. I think it's important to understand that what really needs to happen in order for us to resist Donald Trump's administration and capitalism and climate change is nothing short of a massive, massive left resistance. So in that sense, we've brought all these people into a conversation about resistance and about protesting and about not just women's rights, labor rights, environmental policy, all of that stuff. And that's a success. And these people hopefully will understand that, you know, the march wasn't an end in itself. It was just the beginning. And there's going to be fine-tuning of the messaging and the demands that this movement espouses going forward. And I think we can't expect the early stages of this resistance or this revolution to be perfect, you know? Organizing happens over time, and it's going to take a lot of conversation and learning and dialogue, and that has to happen together. So I'm excited to see what that looks like and how that shapes up. And there's been no shortage at this point of evidence that we're going to have to start fighting together and really quickly. I mean, it's already begun. So I think in that sense, the event was successful, and the co-chairs and all the speakers actually at the rally really emphasized that this is just the beginning. So I'm kind of conceiving of the March on Washington this Saturday as the new left's first birthday. You know, we're not perfect. We haven't quite learned how to share yet or how to speak, or we're working towards that. And it's hopefully going to continue to shape up. There were actually quite a few Canadians at the march in D.C. on Saturday, and I'm sure that many of you have heard about the numbers of Canadians who got turned away at the border. So obviously this transnational cross-border solidarity is really important, but as an American living in Canada, I think what the most important thing Canadians need to keep in mind is that these issues aren't isolated in the United States. We have a prime minister who this fall approved the Kinder Morgan pipeline and who has rolled back his promises on electoral reform. There's no shortage of social movements in Toronto that have been organizing for decades around migrant justice and, you know, Black Lives Matter Toronto and Black Lives Matter Vancouver have done incredible work. So what Canadians really need to do is call their MPs, get involved in municipal and local politics, show up for racial justice, make it out to Black Lives Matter actions and events, make it out to Justice for Migrant Workers actions and events. These are all part of this international decentralized left that is going to come out of this Women's March on Washington. And people need to understand that while we, for the next 4 years in Canada, might have a Justin Trudeau, that doesn't mean there's any time to delay when it comes to asking for justice and responsible leadership. That's what I think Canadians need to prioritize, really getting involved in Canadian politics and understanding that by doing so, you're supporting everyone involved in American politics and everyone involved in organizing around the world.
That was Rabble contributor Sophia Royce sharing reflections from the Women's March on Washington. While she was there, she also had the chance to talk to Bhaskar Sunkara, founding editor and publisher of Jacobin. Jacobin is a print magazine which offers socialist perspectives on politics, economics, and culture. Jacobin was a co-organizer of an event called Anti-Inauguration on Friday, January 20th at the Lincoln Theater in Washington, D.C.
So there's a lot of demonstrations, obviously, today. There's a big march tomorrow. So I thought it was important between the demonstrations to actually have some sort of discussion of, like, the ideas and strategies, like, what we're going to expect from Trump, what's the best way to respond. Because often that kind of is, like, seen as an either-or for the left. Like, people either think that you participate in action or you, like, think about it. And I like this quote from General Baker, trade unionist, late trade unionist. And he used to say that we need, like, more of our thinkers to be fighters and more of our fighters to be thinkers. And I think that was kind of the philosophy, to try to, you know, have discussion and ideas, but pitched at a level that was still accessible.
So in terms of the intersection between theory and practice, is that why it's on Friday night and not after the march, but sort of leading up to tomorrow's march, or is there any sort of connection?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of it. And I also do think it's important that a lot of people who are just, like, mobilize because they dislike Trump, like have some sort of like underlying sense of like politics. Like they have an underlying sense that we're not just against Trump, we're against the system that produced him. And that's not just Republicans, it's also kind of this brand of like Clintonism that wasn't able to oppose Trump. And I think that's a key thing going forward, because a lot of people who are the same sort of like centrists and neoliberals that gave us Trump in many ways, or at least created the conditions for him to prosper, are the same people who are going to like put on a mask and essentially try to lead the opposition to him in the next couple years. And I think we saw this with the movement against the Iraq War. And that's what I'm really afraid of. I know a lot of people around Jacobin, around Haymarket and Verso are wary of that too. And we're trying to just, you know, bring together new ideas and new voices to try to, you know, do a small part. Obviously, this can't do much in itself, but a small part coherent some sort of opposition that's distinct and actually offers some sort of like coherent alternative.
That was Bhaskar Sankara, founding editor and publisher of Jacobin, a print magazine which offers socialist perspectives on politics, economics, and culture. He spoke to Sophia Royce, Rabble contributor, who was on the ground at the Women's March on Washington. Communities across Canada also had their own women's marches, ranging from the biggest ones in Vancouver and Toronto, right down to tiny little Sandy Cove in Nova Scotia with only 15 marchers. Next, we're going to go out to Vancouver and hear from Sama Jaffer. Sama is an undergraduate student at Simon Fraser University, pursuing a joint major in international studies and world literature, and a minor in Middle Eastern and Islamic history. Sama is also Rabble.ca's BC evening editor. She spoke at the march of the struggles of women of color and the close relationships that exist between patriarchy and other forms of cultural oppression, specifically racism and colonialism.
Over the past few years, we have witnessed a rise in hateful, sexist, racist, xenophobic, and Islamophobic rhetoric. And this has been legitimized by the recent federal elections both in Canada and the United States. We've been told time and time again that those who don't look a certain way, dress a certain way, speak a certain way, or come from a certain place should be feared. And that our differences in race, language, class, and faith are somehow indicative of different worldviews. However, the reality that we're all standing here today, united in our opinion that women's rights are human rights, proves that hate and fear will not prevail. And it is empowering to stand among so many like-minded, strong individuals who are dedicated to working towards a society in which women, all women, are treated with dignity and respect. And by working together in this fight for our rights, we show that we refuse to be divided. And while we stand united today in the face of ever-growing hatred and fear, it is important to remember that racism and xenophobia are systemic issues that also exist in Canada. These issues do not stop at the border. Since the U.S. election in November, I've heard people, often white and sometimes even women, say how we are so lucky to be in Canada. And I have tried my very best to politely offer my view, my lived experience as a woman of color, as well as the experiences of some of my hijab-wearing Muslim sisters who were targeted with hateful comments in the immediate aftermath of the election. And the sharp rise in hate crimes against Muslims and those who appear to be Muslim was also documented in 2015, the year that the niqab became an issue in our federal election, for some reason. And while the events south of the border have really struck a nerve, pushing us to mobilize here, we need to remember that oppression and violation of the rights of people who are different, and in particular women and children, by those in power is not a new phenomenon by any means. White supremacist ideologies have been veiled by our myth of Canadian multiculturalism. Over the years, Canada has witnessed racism in a number of incarnations, primarily against Indigenous people, Black immigrants and former slaves from the United States, Chinese immigrants, Japanese citizens, South Asian immigrants, and today's rampant Islamophobia is just the newest form, and unless we confront the systems which allow for the subjugation of human beings based on the color of their skin, this list will continue to grow. As a nation, we have our work cut out for us. Canada's reputation has been stained by our inaction in the face of hundreds of missing and murdered Indigenous women. Now is not the time for inaction. Now is an opportunity for us to prove that women in Vancouver are resilient. and they are not and will not be silent in the face of injustice. Since 1991, women of Vancouver's downtown east side have been coming together on February 14th to remember and honor the women who have disappeared. And for 27 years, they have fought the violence and injustice against Indigenous women in the community. This Valentine's Day, you should consider joining the downtown east side Women's Memorial March in their long-standing fight for justice. Over a year ago, we saw the initiation of Black Lives Matter Vancouver, a group that is dedicated to drawing attention to the ongoing struggles of Black people as well as all marginalized and invisible communities. Three American women started the Black Lives Matter movement, and women and non-binary folk are at the forefront of the local Vancouver chapter. The movement highlights the reality that Black people have experienced a long and unbroken history of police brutality. They are at the forefront of resisting state violence and calling out systemic racism in the United States and globally, a struggle that will only become more important over the next 4 years. It is unfortunate and rather disappointing that Black Lives Matter Vancouver, a group of dedicated, vocal supporters of intersectional feminism, are not represented here today, as they are leaders in advocating for justice and equality in Vancouver. Acts of violence and discrimination fueled by Islamophobia are most often enacted against visible hijab-wearing Muslim women. While Muslim women who choose to wear the hijab may do so for a number of different personal reasons, no one wears it to entice assault. And I can tell you that November 9th, 2016 was one very frightening day to be a hijabi, even in Vancouver. No woman should have to fear for their personal safety when making decisions about what to wear. Unfortunately, this fear is very real for many women, and in particular, Muslim women. And as we leave this solidarity march today, we need to realize that this is only the beginning. We must continue to call out the systems of oppression that are in place to keep women down. We must continue to voice our dissatisfaction with individuals who are working to make fear and hate the new norms. Yes! This is a time for us as women and allies to be vigilant, to speak out when you hear strangers, friends, colleagues, or family members using and repeating divisive rhetoric. This is not a time for excuses or apologetics. This is a time to build connections, to pursue solidarity, and to continue to fight for women's rights. Before we leave today, let us make a commitment to speaking out for those whose voices may not be as loud, to intervening anytime we witness women of color being put down, harassed, or attacked. Let us build on this movement and make a commitment to continue fighting for the rights of our mothers, sisters, and daughters. Yeah! And finally, let us not let a Twitter-loving egomaniac keep us down. Thank you for coming out today.
Samah Jaffer. And finally, we end up in Toronto. We put out a call to women who were going to the march in Toronto, so we were hoping they could gather some thoughts from people in the crowd. Jean Leggett responded enthusiastically. Thanks for that, Jean. She's the founder and CEO of One More Story Games, a gaming company based in Barrie, Ontario. Through their games, the company strives to close the diversity gap and encourage progressive values of diversity and equality. I spoke to Jean after the march about her impressions of the day in Toronto.
You know, the energy was incredible. There were so many people there. I've noticed in the last 6 months, especially, I've been thinking about people of color, visible minorities, and differently abled people and Indigenous people. And thinking about where do I fit in all of that? Because I recognize that I am a white woman with an incredibly amount of privilege, but I'm also a woman who's hard of hearing and involved in the deaf community. So I'm thinking about where do I fit in all of this in the bigger picture? Why are they marching? Somebody had just tagged me in a Facebook post today and said, help me understand, are they marching because they're angry Hillary didn't win? Is this an anti-Trump thing? And I said, you know, Google's your friend. Definitely, first and foremost. But mostly I think people are willfully ignorant to the fact that a lot of systematic policy changes are in effect as a result of who now is leading the White House. And that culturally impacts us around the world. So that's what I was seeing at the rally. It was incredible. I was very mindful about who I was interviewing as well, because I wanted to have diversity in the voices and who was speaking and who was lending their thoughts. You'll hear from some really energetic and vibrant 11-year-old girls and why they were there, from a woman who, I believe she said she was 78. This is like her 30th March. And she just had heart surgery a few months ago, and she was there with her daughter and her granddaughter, and how important it was to be marching for her granddaughter, who's 14. It was an incredible day and beautiful weather, so I think that helped with the turnout. But more importantly, having that solidarity across the world, even in Antarctica. So 7 continents, that this was a global statement that we were all making, that enough is enough. Stop treating social needs like an afterthought. And I don't know, maybe this is the tide that needed to be turned for us to start putting social enterprise first, not capital enterprise. I think solidarity is the key word and the key message that I'm taking away. I've seen from friends who have been marching in Europe, in Australia, and across North America, and sort of seeing what the messages were. And what I loved in particular were that in Toronto, at least, it opened with the people from Black Lives Matter, from the Indigenous community, from the trans community, that they are leading this. That is not the function or privilege of the white woman to say, okay, we're taking up this cause. We really need to be very conscious of intersectional feminism and doing things for the right reason, not just because we get a cool hat out of it.
And by the way, love your pussy hat.
I love it too. I have to say thank you to my friend Dana for knitting it for me. We had just checked into our hotel and she was supposed to meet us, and she just comes running in and says, I'm not paying for the $45 for the parking. So there we are. I put on the hat. I'm talking to the concierge, and this gentleman behind us says, can I shake your hand? So he was from Ohio. They purposely left Ohio so that they could escape the inauguration noise. And he was so proud of what we were doing on his behalf. So I think that's just funny little miracles and happenstances, that there are a lot more people that support the cause of the Women's March for Solidarity, Solidarity for Equal Rights.
That was Jean Leggett, Rabble's feet on the ground at the Toronto Women's March. And now here are some of her conversations with people in the crowd.
For you as a Canadian to be here marching?
To stand up against all hate and oppression everywhere. It affects us all.
As a Canadian, I feel that it's in our heritage that we do not exclude people, and the direction that we're starting to take is scary where it could go, and historically we know it's the wrong direction.
Well, the reason why I'm here marching is because what I feel, there's two things. First of all, I'm 55 years old and I can't believe I'm still marching over the same issues for the last 30 years. Second of all, it's not so much what Trump is, it's what he brings out in other people, the hatred, the racism, all kinds of things, all kinds of negative things. The other reason is that we in North America enjoy a very good social safety net, and what Trump has done in becoming, in the appointments he's made, he's appointed billionaires who really just want to deconstruct and take away that social safety net.
I'm here to support everyone's rights, rights for all, equal rights.
And would you say that you're a feminist?
I'm for everybody's rights. Everybody deserves equal rights.
Well, I consider myself a feminist, always have, and feminism is about justice for all. If we don't have justice for all, we don't have justice. And there's a lot of threats right here in Canada.
I'm here standing up for, like, because in the United States, it's not really fair because they're, like, not treating women as nice as like men. So I'm here to stand for that and to help so Trump will stop it.
I want to add that by being different and wearing pajamas is a way of being really like standing out. So this is called PJ Power.
I think that women's reproductive rights under threat in the U.S. is also a threat to Canadian women, and I think it's really important to let American women know that we're standing with them as they enter into the next 4 years of having to protect themselves and their children and their families.
I'm here for my son, my three-year-old son.
I'm, like a lot of people, scared, and I think it's important to come together when we're scared. Yeah, and show that we're courageous.
This is about the 30th or 40th March I've been on. I'm 78 years old, and I'm here with my 14, I'm going to start crying, my 14-year-old granddaughter. And I want a better world for her. It's something I've fought for all of my life. I've marched in Washington. I've marched in Philadelphia, in Toronto, all through Florida. But this is special. I'm with my family.
Was a clip from a Rabble episode from 2017. To listen to the full original program, visit the link in the show notes of this episode. And now, this is our In Case You Missed It segment, where we review the top stories from this week on Rabble.ca. This week's In Case You Missed It segment is presented by Rabble's Jillian Piper. Take it away, Jillian.
Starting with national politics, the Liberal government has passed legislation that makes it harder for those accused of crimes but not convicted to get bail. This bill, known as C-14, is popular among politicians who claim to be tough on crime, such as Ontario Premier Doug Ford. Others say that the legislation isn't justified. Dr. Nicole Myers, a criminology professor at Queen's University in Kingston, is against the bill. She mentions that the crime rates are too low, and many jails are holding people not yet convicted of a crime for far longer than they're meant to be. Given the slow pace of the justice system, Canada is becoming known for lengthy pre-trial detention. In the long term, this bill may do more harm than good, as it has shown that people are more likely to commit a crime after being held in jail pre-trial. Also passed recently was Bill C-22. This legislation raises concerns about technological safety and privacy. This bill makes it so tech companies have to hold on to our data instead of cycling it out so harmful trackers can't find it. It also makes it so law enforcement and private companies can look through your communications. Encrypted information is also no longer safe, as they can now decrypt any codes put through. This continues the rise of digital surveillance on members of the public. And finally, in national news, the Liberal Party has set records for the number of bills passed with minimal consideration or debate in this session of Parliament. One of the most significant bills is C-30, which allows members of the Cabinet to bypass any existing law that prohibits the use of toxic pesticides. The government has said that the Cabinet would only use this new power responsibly and under careful circumstances, yet they never said what those circumstances would be. Both House Leader Stephen McKinnon and Health Minister Marjorie Michel have been ducking away from giving specific answers on this topic. In Bill C-30 is a provision that gives the Cabinet power to allow use of any kind of pesticide that the law decides is dangerous to both the environment or health of Canadian citizens. The Cabinet is able to use this power for the purpose of emergency control of a detrimental infestation in order to protect economical safety or food safety. The Liberals hoped that nobody would notice the fine print at the bottom of the bill, but Bill C-30 is raising many concerns about public health and how these pesticides, if used, may affect the environment. As always, you can read the full versions of all of the stories talked about today on Rabble.ca.
Thanks, Jillian. And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thanks so much for listening. To help support our show further, consider subscribing to Rabble Radio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. You can also choose to subscribe to us over Patreon for special bonus content of Rabble Radio. If you're already subscribed, consider making a donation to rabble.ca at rabble.ca/donate. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on Rabble.ca, and thank you to Carl Nuremberg for supplying the music for this episode. I'm Nick Seabrook, and we'll talk to you next time.